This is Samuel's Persiflage, episode number 8 for September 2006. It's September, but only just welcome. This is episode 8 of Samuel's Persiflage. I'm Samuel Gordon Stewart. I hope I find you well, and I hope you can stick around because we've got quite a show coming up today. We've got world-renowned technology broadcaster Leo Laporte coming up. He'll be taking up most of the show, I think. Plenty to talk about there. He's coming out to talk with us about Windows Vista, the next version of Windows, as well as competing operating systems, and also to talk about podcasting. He's doing a lot of pioneering work in the field of podcasting. He's got a very successful podcast network going, which I'm sure many of you have heard of, the twit.tv network, with the flagship This Week in Tech podcast. There's a lot he's done there, a lot he is doing, and certainly well worth the chat there. We've also got a little bit of feedback, not as much as usual. It's very sparse pickings in the listener feedback this month, in fact. But there is some there. Podcast at samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address. There's a thought for the month, and, well, we've also got a persiflage puzzle, so I hope you've got your pen and paper handy. We might see about drawing out a persiflage puzzle, I think. This month, it's two words. The first word has five letters. Ooh. That was a bit loud. Paper hitting a microphone there. Not good when that happens. So we'll try to avoid that, I think. Five letters in the first word. Only one letter in the second word. You'd think that would be a giveaway, but it's not a vowel. I'm giving you clues now. That's not good. Alright, so five letters in the first word, one letter in the second word. So we'll draw out five letters this time round out of the hat. And the first letter there, it's the letter G for goat. It ain't in there. Sorry, it ain't in there. So we'll try another one. It's W for William. It's also not in there. Two letters that are not in there. Let's try for another one there. And it is... it's the letter Y for yellow, and it's in there. It's the fifth letter, so the last letter of the first word. We draw out another letter, and it's the letter P for Peter. Afraid it's not in there. So let's go for the fifth and final letter in this round. Z for zebra. You're probably not surprised if I tell you it's not in there. So we've got one letter in there so far, but... yeah, all right. I'll give you some more letters a little bit later on, and then maybe you'll be able to work out just what the persiflage puzzle is this month. A couple months ago in episode 6 of Samuel's Persiflage, we spoke with Pia Waugh, one of the organisers of Australia's premier Linux conference, linux.conf.au. That was all well and good, but there's plenty happening outside of the open source world, and for most people, the next version of Windows Vista is probably going to be at the top of their priority list. Joining me on the line all the way from sunny San Francisco is one of the most well-known and probably most well-respected technology broadcasters on the planet, Mr. Leo Laporte. Leo, welcome.
Hi, Samuel. I'm a master of persiflage, so I'm ready for you.
That's good. Am I right? Is it nice and warm and sunny where you are?
Well, let's see. It's a little chilly. It's in the 70s right now, but you know, we're heading into our winter, so we're starting to get the beginnings of fall weather.
All right. Well, it's about 40 degrees Fahrenheit where I am.
Oh, wow. It's freezing.
Yeah.
But summer's on its way, right?
Yeah, summer's coming. It's just we had a bit of a hot streak, and now it's gone cold again.
Yeah.
So let's, for those of you who, I've completely lost it. For those of the listeners who don't know who you are, perhaps you could give us a little bit of a brief rundown of where you're coming from.
Well, down under, I'm probably best known as the host of Call for Help, which is an hour-long tech call-in show we do on the How To Network. We actually do that in Canada, where it airs. I, for 6 years, did that show and another show called The Screensavers in the States on a 24-hour tech channel called Tech TV. It was a somewhat popular channel. I mean, among geeks, it was a very popular channel and went off the air a couple of years ago. Ever since, those of us who've worked on Tech TV have found other jobs, obviously, but we kind of stay in touch, and we do a number of podcasts. I have a whole network of podcasts, 13 now at last count, although I'm losing track of them, at twit.tv. The network is This Week in Tech, and that's the big show, which we do every Sunday. But there are a few other shows on security and on the Internet and on open source. We do a show called Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, who is the open source manager for Google. And he's been around in open source for a long time. And he used to work at SourceForge and OSDN and Slashdot. And so he's got a great list of people. We've been having a lot of fun talking to them. And so it's great for me. I even do a biotech podcast now. Podcasting has been really a wonderful boon for me.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit about the Twit Network a little bit later on, because in many ways the work you're doing there is pioneering for the field of podcasting. So we will come back to that. But you mentioned the Screensavers. That's where I first encountered you, actually.
It aired very briefly in Australia, unfortunately.
I never actually saw it air in Australia. I saw a video of you and Patrick Norton demonstrating the Smoothwall firewall.
Is that how you found out about Smoothwall?
No, it was one of the ways, because that was when I was sort of looking at various open source routers, so... Yeah, that was a good intro.
Yeah, Patrick was a big fan of Smoothwall, and still is, and promotes it all the time. And I think our claim to fame on Tech TV was we were very likely the first and probably last television network ever to air a live Linux install. We did a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody will ever do that again, but boy, it sure was fun.
Yeah, there's all sorts of videos floating around the web of stuff Tech TV did live.
Yeah, if you do a search on YouTube for Tech TV, one word, you'll find a bunch of clips. You get a pretty good idea of what we're doing. It was exciting. I mean, we were doing it live. The Screensavers and Call for Help were daily live hour long shows, and that was so much fun. That's the one thing you don't get out of podcasting is that sense of live immediacy. I mean, boy, that was neat.
Must have taken a lot of preparation, too.
Oh, yeah, big staff. I mean, one of the advantages of doing podcasting is here I am, a one-man show, doing almost as much programming per week. Actually, now it's probably slightly more programming per week all by myself, and that took hundreds of people, of course, and millions of dollars. It cost, I think, $100 million a year to run Tech TV.
Ouch.
And that's one of the reasons it's not around anymore. It was a pretty expensive undertaking.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll move on to Windows Vista. Now, that's the next version of the Windows operating system, the successor to Windows XP, and you're going to present a few talks on it, and so you probably are the right person to talk to about it. There's a few security concerns floating about with it. There's also concerns about the release date being pushed back yet again. Do you think it will be pushed back again?
Not now, no. In fact, I think it's very solid right now. The release candidate 1 is out in wide distribution. Microsoft last week distributed release candidate 2. Well, there's two branches, but what looks to be probably very close to their ready-to-manufacture release. That's the one, the gold disc that goes to the printers. And once you've done that, you're committed. That will be release one. We just started a Windows podcast, Windows Weekly, with Paul Thurrott, who is really the expert, far more than I. And he says his sources inside Microsoft say that October 15th will be the date Windows will be done and they will start shipping it. Now, you won't be able to get it. Customers will be able to get it towards the end of the year, and end users will be able to get it in January. But I'm also told that machines that are purchased after some date in October, I think the early part of October, will come with a coupon for Windows Vista. So we're very close to the actual release of it. I think the jokes that we've made for years about the slipping release dates of Windows Vista finally can come to an end.
And we can apply them to the version of Windows after that.
That's right. And that will undoubtedly slip forever, but yeah, we'll see.
One of the main criticisms of Windows Vista is that it's in many ways a resource hog, especially with the AeroGlass interface. Now, it doesn't have to have the AeroGlass interface, which is sort of the really high-end version of it, but do you think that people are going to be tempted to upgrade to it, even if it's not going to deliver them the new interface?
Yeah, everybody will, because everybody's concerned about security. There will be other new features. It's not merely the interface. In fact, I don't even really like the interface. It's a little bit too cotton candy for me. However, I like something a little more understated. You can change it back, of course. You can change it to anything you want. I don't think AeroGlass is the reason to go to Vista. The reason to go to Vista is improved security. There is a new, overall there's going to be a new interface on all of Microsoft's products. They're doing it in Office 2007 as well. You know, there's new ribbon toolbar, which eliminates menus. People are going to want that, and that's more than cosmetics. It's really a new way of using applications. One I haven't really cottoned to yet, but I understand that those who have forced themselves to use it are pretty happy with it. I think that people will want to upgrade. I know many people won't be able to upgrade. I mean, if you really a reason not to, everybody will want to. A reason not to would be if you don't have a gigabyte of RAM, if you don't have a fast processor, 2 gigahertz or better processor. It just won't be usable. I mean, it's not, you know, you have to have a good video card to use the AeroGlass, but even if you don't turn on AeroGlass, the thing will be slow if you don't have a lot of memory and a fast processor.
And you did mention security. Microsoft have been working very hard to improve the security of Windows, which is something we've all wanted for a very long time. But there's also a few security issues. Not so long ago, there were issues raised about the new network stack.
Yeah, we did a podcast, Vista's Virgin Stack, with Steve Gibson, who does a security podcast for Twit. A lot of what Microsoft did with Vista was rewrite from scratch. Vista is based on Windows Server 2003, which is the newest, latest release of Windows. And much of it has been rewritten, including the stack, the network stack. And on the one hand, you'd say, well, good, because the old one was pretty bad. But on the other hand, the old one had been banged on for a long time. And so over time, it had been fixed, and a lot of the bad flaws in the old stack were patched. In fact, it's pretty good now. You start from scratch, you run the risk of introducing a whole new set of unpatched flaws. And furthermore, and this was the real concern, a report came out from Symantec a couple of months ago in which they looked at the stack in a beta version. Now remember, these are beta versions. We're not looking at the release version, but they looked at the stack in the beta version and they found bugs in it, flaws, holes in it that had been patched years ago, in Windows 98. So it does make one wonder, who's writing this and aren't they learning the lessons of the past? I'm sure it will be more reliable, more robust by the time it ships, but it is always a concern when you write something that important from scratch. You unless you were extraordinarily careful, and maybe even using newer tools to prevent things like buffer overruns, you're likely to run into a whole new set of exploits and flaws.
Do you think we're going to see a lot of people, especially corporations, not upgrading to Vista until at least Security Service Pack 1's out?
Well, for a lot of reasons, there's a training curve. Microsoft's beating the drum right now to say, oh, no, you'll find it's easy to use. You won't have that big training curve. But anytime you've got a new operating system, corporations are always very slow to roll it out. The people who really care the most about Windows Vista shipping are the computer manufacturers. Because the truth is, people don't, the vast majority of users don't upgrade Windows. They upgrade their PC, and it comes with a new version of Windows. It's really the easiest and best way to do it. So a lot of people wait to buy a new computer if there is a new version on the horizon. That's probably going on right now. We've seen sales drop off. Business is certainly going to wait. I mean, when Windows XP came out, it took several years before it was widely adopted in business, and still a great many businesses use Windows 2000. In fact, really, the only stick Microsoft can use to get people to upgrade to Windows, a new version of Windows, is by end of lifing the old version and stopping support of it. So, and that's what they've done with Windows 95 and 98, and they're soon to do with Windows 2000. And, you know, then business really does, they don't want to have an operating system that's no longer supported, so then they really do have to move. So, you know, as important as Vista is, and there hasn't been a new release of Windows in 5 years, it's it's always something business is slow to move to. They really want to see it. They'll do, you know, and that's why they're releasing it now in December for business. They want business to have as much time as possible to evaluate it, to try it out, to get comfortable with it before the actual ship date.
And, of course, it's, as you said, it's been 5 years since the last version of Windows was released. So other operating systems, for example, Mac and Linux, have had an awfully large amount of time to work on their own operating systems. And especially in the case of Linux, really get them ready for desktop users. Do you think that these operating systems are going to make any dent in Vista's market?
Absolutely. I think in some ways they already are. I mean, Microsoft has taken so long to get this out. They've had such a rotten time with security. These other operating systems, as you say, are better. They're newer. They're more robust. I see even end users, even novice end users, considering Linux as a choice. And I certainly tell everybody who listens. I do a radio show in Los Angeles that we just answer questions about technology, and I tell anybody who calls who's buying a home computer, buy an Apple, buy a Mac, because you don't want to have to become a security expert, and that's really how it is right now if you buy a Windows machine.
Of course, with the Mac, Apple certainly managed to, I suppose, rejuvenate their brand name to some extent with the iPod. Up until the iPod, there were a lot of people who saw the Apple Mac as that computer that sort of was running back in the mid-90s, but sort of tailed off and no one heard of it since. But now with the iPod, people have said, well, Apple are actually doing something. The Mac looks pretty good. Maybe it's worth a shot.
A lot of geeks have moved to Mac because really OS X, remember, OS X is much newer than Windows. It's running on BSD, which is a very robust, well-known, stable Unix, using a mock kernel, which is a very good kernel. It has a lot of advantages, frankly, over any other machine. I mean, in effect, you get a commercial operating system with a lot of slick features on top of a true Unix. You know, somebody like me, I live in the command line on OS X and love it. I think a lot of geeks move to OS X. Now, there's an interesting movement away from OS X. People like Cory Doctorow, who are really thought leaders in the free software and anti-DRM movement. Corey is a longtime Mac user. He's a science fiction writer, worked at the EFF for a long time, really smart guy. He and a number of others I've seen are saying, you know, we're not going to use Apple. It's just not right to use any closed source operating system, particularly as we move closer and closer to a day and age where copy protection, digital rights management, is built into the operating system. They believe politically that the right thing to do is to use an open operating system with no copy protection, no rights management built into it. And I have to say I agree with them. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to pry my Mac out of my fingers because I love the Macintosh operating system. And, to me, it combines the best of both worlds. But I have to agree with Corey, especially as we start watching Apple, really get moved closer and closer into relationships with record companies and movie companies. There's a lot of pressure on Apple to build copy protection into the operating system, to make it a part of the operating system. That's what's happening here in the States. Is there's all the content creators, Hollywood, the record labels, are pushing our United States Congress to legislate a broadcast flag, which is essentially to mandate in all hardware capable of playing back digital content, which is, of course, every computer made, hardware copy protection, a way for the content creator to flip a switch, in effect, in the device, saying, this can't be copied. And but by doing that, you're really giving Hollywood and the record labels the right to reach their long arm into your machine and tell you what you can do with it. Hmm. And I agree with Corey that that's not the right way to go. Now, that's not law yet. I imagine it will be law at some point. And I don't know what the state of the law is in Australia, although because of WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, a UN chartered organization that's essentially controlled by the record companies and the movie companies, I think that this will be kind of the law of the globe eventually. Virtually every government is doing what it can to be compliant with the WIPO treaties, and that means broadcast flag and DRM everywhere.
Hmm.
Bad thing for users.
Yeah, DRM, I think there is the copyright laws here, they seem to be being relaxed a tiny bit, but the way I look at it, what they're doing is that they make it sound like you can copy more stuff than you actually can, and then really what they're saying is, well, you can copy this TV show, you can watch it a few times, but then it's gone. And really, that's just more digital rights.
That's DRM.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When, you know, I don't want anybody to reach their arm into my computer and delete a file on my computer, and that's effectively what they're doing.
Hmm.
It's none of their business. If I've purchased something, I own it, I should be able to do whatever I want with it, short of, you know, pirating it, giving it away, stealing their... But if I own it, it's on my machine, I should be able to burn it to a DVD, I should be able to watch it on any device I have without restriction. I've paid for it.
Hmm.
But of course, the content companies don't like that idea. They really, everybody, software, content, everybody wants you to rent your content, your software. They don't want you to own it. They want to reserve the right to take it away from you. And I'm just not into rental.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose that's one of the things, though, that does hold Linux back in some ways, is that there are all of these closed formats, such as, I mean, even the MP3 format is a closed format. To some extent, that if it's not included with Linux, people start it, they try to open a file, they can't open it, and they blame Linux for it, and
right.
It's back at square one, so there's a whole debate there.
We have Linux to thank, really, for the fact that you can copy a DVD. If it weren't for DVD John, Jan Johansson, wanting to create a DVD player for Linux... we wouldn't have DCSS. Because he had to figure out how the encryption worked in order to make a DVD player for Linux, he had to reverse engineer it. I think you can say that in a lot of cases, that the reason that these technologies have been cracked and reverse engineered and defeated is so that they can work on Linux. You know, I still think we need to have an open source, free operating software. I don't think operating systems should be owned by a company. I think that's akin to having the highways owned by a company. They belong to everybody. They're important to commerce. They're important to the free and easy exchange of information. Operating systems, by all rights, really shouldn't belong to anybody. I think programs can. That's fine, and you can make the choice between whether you want a commercial program or an open source program. I wouldn't use commercial encryption. I'd be very careful about, you know, using commercial programs that relying on your privacy or security from commercial programs, because you have no way of auditing them. But certainly the operating system should be open and free. And, you know, as much as I believe that, and I do use Linux, but I also use Windows and I use Mac, and I have to say that my full-time, you know, operating system, the one I turn to when I want to get work done, is still a Macintosh. But I think that the time is running out for Apple. They've opened some of it, you know. I mean, much of the underlying operating system is open. But I suspect as they get under pressure, more and more pressure from content creators, you'll see less and less of that. And that's when people are going to have to make a choice. They're going to finally have to sit down and say, well, am I willing to sacrifice a little ease of use for freedom? to do what I want, and they'll have to make that decision. I encourage people to use Linux whenever they can.
Mm. So what are you using at the moment?
Well, sitting right in front of me right now is a Mac Pro, which is the latest Macintosh. It's dual Xeon chips, and so it's a quad processor. I have a 30-inch screen, Apple screen. Right next to that is a Windows machine, still running XP. I'm not yet ready to install Vista on a work machine, on a production machine. I just don't think it's quite there yet. It will be soon. And probably when I run Vista, I'll run it in a virtual machine on a Mac, most likely. And then, you know, I have an asterisk box in the corner, which I actually haven't really started to use, but that's a Linux, as you probably know, a Linux phone system. And I run Linux in virtual machines. I like Ubuntu a lot. That's kind of become my, for a long time I was a SUSE guy before that Mandrake, now Mandriva, but I've become an Ubuntu guy. So that's kind of my, as I said, I have to use all three. Day to day, though, you know, I mean, the machine that the screen that is centered in front of me on my desk is a Mac.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we might as well move on to the twit.tv network. Now, as you mentioned earlier, Tech TV closed, folded, well, whatever you want to call it, and you stayed in contact with a lot of your friends from there. And really, that's how it all started, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I mean, one of the things that happens with geeks, and it's one of the reasons that podcasts even exist, is we like to talk to each other. We like to, when I worked at Tech TV, I would go downstairs to the lab. We had a very nice lab with a lot of equipment and new stuff in all the time, and five or six people full time just reviewing stuff. And that was a nice resource. I'd go down there and say, "What's new? Show me the latest. What do you think about this?" We'd get together all the time as journalists do and say, so what's your take on this? And because no one person can cover all of tech, especially in the last 10 years, it's just exploded. But we all want to know what's going on. When you talk to a tech journalist, when you see them talking to one another, the first thing that they ask is, "So what have you seen? What's new? What's hot? What's exciting?" We're all trying to find out what's the next thing. So we always kind of did that while we were working together. When we stopped working together, I think we missed it quite a bit. And in fact, would get together from time to time, either on the phone or in person. We were spread out all over the west coast of California, but we would try to get together and talk about this stuff. At one point we did, right after Macworld Expo in 2005, and early January 2005, and I recorded the conversation. And it really was not a formal radio conversation or interview in any sense. It was just us gassing. It was just us talking about what was going on. But I put it on the website, and people loved it. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. And, of course, one of the things that happened after Tech TV went out of business is we got a lot of, every day, I still meet people. Here it is, 2 years, more than 2 years later, I still every day meet somebody who says, "Oh, I miss Tech TV. I miss the screensavers. Boy, we loved having that." For 6 years, and a lot of these people grew up with it, started watching as teenagers and now are in the business. For 6 years, there was somewhere you could go every night and kind of be, first of all, affirmed in your geekiness, that it was okay to be geeky, that we were geeky too, and here we are in a big TV show talking about stuff, and not as most networks now do, talking down to people, not dumbing it down, but really talking about it as geeks talk to one another. That was, I think for a lot of people, that was an eye-opener. That was great. There'd never been anything before like it. And so every time I meet people, they say, "We miss that. There's nothing like it now." And so, I realize, and everybody who ever worked at Tech TV knows in their heart of hearts, that there's a large number of people who want this stuff, who are very interested in this stuff. So, when we weren't going to spend $100 million a year putting another cable channel together, we decided, let's try it as a podcast. As you know, podcasting is cheap. It's very easy, especially for what I do, which is all audio. Some of them.
It's cheap except for the bandwidth, but you don't have to.
Bandwidth can be expensive. We don't pay for our bandwidth. Although, there are ways to do it. Libsyn, at libsyn.com. It's $30 US a month for unlimited bandwidth. There are more and more of these springing up. I don't think bandwidth has to stop anybody. The equipment certainly is cheap. Really, the only expense is your time and effort and how much you want to put into it. And some people put a lot and some people don't. And now Kevin Rose, who also worked on the screensavers, does video. His company, Revision3.com, is really starting to turn into a television channel. I think of myself almost as a radio station with 13 shows. And because it's a podcast, it not only is it cheap and easy to do, you can also be even geekier than we were on TV, even narrower. You can aim at a niche, and I think that's great. I mean, people want that kind of information. There are certainly a lot of technically literate people in the world, and that number is growing very rapidly in the next generation. It'll probably approach 100%. And those people need this information. It's happening very quickly. I can't think of an area where the rate of change is as fast. They need the information. They want to be. But at the same time, you know, as many as we are, we're still in clumps, you know, alone. And, you know, there are user groups and there are places you can gather. But unless you live in an urban area where there are a lot of other geeks and you know where they hang out, you're kind of doing it by yourself. So it's really reaffirming to have somebody doing this kind of stuff. You can listen to it. I think podcasts for any niche, and it's, you know, for golf, for knitting, and for technology, are a real boon.
So why do you think it really took off the way it did? I mean, it started with just This Week in Tech, which at first, having listened to some of the really early episodes, you really didn't get the impression that this was going to be anything more than a few people having a chat once a week. And now it's grown into, as you said, 13 podcasts.
It's demand. I'm just responding to demand. And I, you know, they're so easy. I can't stop. It's like chips. I can't stop eating them. Every day I come in and I have an idea. And the thing is, it's so easy. The barrier to entry is so easy. There's no. Especially now, I have all the equipment. I can crank these things out. And so I have an idea to do a podcast. I do it.
Yeah.
The latest two are Windows Weekly, as I mentioned, which is going to focus on Vista. That's much needed. I mean, we didn't have a Windows podcast. My goodness, how could that be? And then it happened that, you know, we're on This Week in Tech, which is kind of a conversation roundtable about the week's news. We frequently cover legal issues, as we just have, Samuel, you know. And so I thought, boy, you know, in fact, I think I said it out loud, which was my mistake. Boy, we really should have a legal podcast with actual attorneys who know this stuff talking about it. I said it, and the next day I got hundreds of emails from attorneys saying, I'll do it. So one of them was very compelling, a woman I'd known for years, Denise Howell, who was a very well-known legal blogger, attorney, and an expert in IP, intellectual property law, and former counsel with Electronic Frontier Foundation, and knows everybody. Has a great voice, and she said, you know, I'd love to host this, and I will do all the work. I'll put it together. I'll edit it, and I said, okay, Denise. So she's gone out and pretty much duplicated my equipment setup. She's lined up great people. In fact, the first one has Hank Berry, who was the guy who the legal counsel for Napster. I mean, this guy is really an interesting fella. He's on the panel, but it's a number of different people. He's now a partner at Hummer Windblad, which is one of the actually, I guess he's been at Hummer for a while. He's a former CEO of Napster, but he's been at Hummer for about 6 or 7 years. They are a venture fund that specializes in software, and they're great. So Hank knows everything, and is really going to be a great panelist. That'll be the first episode, which, depending on when this comes out, will either be out already or out soon.
Well, I'm going to try and get this out before the end of September, because I try to do one episode of Samuel's Persiflage each month. That varies depending on my workload. But I'll try and get it out before the end of the month. But I'm just thinking that it's starting to look like it's going to be the not-quite-September edition.
Well, it'll be a race between This Week in Law and Samuel's Persiflage. We'll see who comes out first.
I suppose another thing with the Twit Network is that being the big names that a lot of the people involved are, yourself included, of course, you've had this opportunity to really take podcasting where others haven't been able to. You've been able to attract advertising. I mean,
yeah.
People like me who have a couple hundred listeners a month wouldn't even consider advertising, because no one would be interested in advertising to 200 people a month. But to the same extent, you have, hundreds of thousands of listeners each week.
Right.
And It's just
many of them in Australia too, thanks to the TV show. So that's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I don't get credit for international listeners. Here's what's happening, Samuel. I think ultimately many podcasts, even small ones like yours, will have advertising because advertisers are looking for an efficient way to spend their dollar. Right now, when they buy network television, they're kind of spreading it everywhere. And if you're looking for a specific audience, boy, what you can't get more specific, more targeted than a podcast. So I do think advertisers are going to get there, but we're in very early stages here. In fact, this example of, well, you know, we go to ad agencies, they've never been able to buy a medium that is international. They've only been able to buy, at best, a national advertisement. So even these international companies like Dell, they have no accounting system for buying a global medium. So they say, well, you know, I'm glad you have, you know, more than 25% of our audience is international, is outside the U.S. They say, we're glad you have that. We're glad they're listening. We know they'll probably buy some computers from us, but we ain't going to pay you for them because we don't have any way to account it. So we're in a very, very, we're convincing people now that podcasting is for real. And I think it's going to take a while. But I think you'll be surprised. I think in a few years there will be ways to do this. Advertisers, they might not buy an individual podcast with 100 people, but what they'll do is go to agencies that aggregate podcasts. And they'll say, I have a very specific target. I want males 18 to 25 in this income bracket with this education level who are in, you know, likely to watch this TV show, for instance. And an agency will, having done its research and aggregated hundreds, maybe thousands of podcasts together, be able to deliver exactly what they want. And it's a very exciting model because it means that even a podcast with 200 people will have it. I think you may be surprised. You'll have advertising. The agency we use is called PodTrack at PodTrac.com. And that's exactly their model. I think I've worked with them since they first started. In fact, when they first called, I said, look, I'm not going to take advertising. I've already decided that. However, I'll talk to you because I think this is important that you do it right and understand the needs of podcasters. So I've worked really closely with them over a year, getting them to understand what podcasters care about and helping them refine this business model. I think they have a fantastic business model. And they're just one. I mean, you know, just as you might not have thought that a blog could make any money, thanks to Google AdSense and technologies like that, now suddenly a blog can make money. I think even better with a podcast. A podcast is a natural medium. Now, many podcasters will say, well, I don't want to take ads. You don't have to take ads. In fact, we ask for donations, and we thought for a long time we'd be able to support the network. In fact, for a long time we were able to support the network on donations. But as we grow and I have more contributors, I don't feel it. You know, right now all the contributors are donating their services. I just don't feel like I can continue to, you know, ask them to work for free. And I'm not really, I work, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week on these podcasts, and I'm working for free. I can afford to do that. I have a real job, but you know, ultimately I'd like to get paid too. So donations were never enough to do that. They were enough to make sure we had bandwidth, web hosting, rent, equipment, you know, all the day-to-day expenses. We never lost any money. I never had to take money out of my wallet to pay for this. But at the same time, it was never enough money to pay us. So, you know, I think we need to move to the next step. Now, we'll probably still take donations because for a couple of reasons. One is advertising comes and goes. The bills do not. And so I ask people for a recurring $2 U.S. donation, which is a very small donation, you know, a cup of coffee a month, considering the value that they get out of it. And that consistent month in, month out stream trickle, maybe, of money is means that I can sign a lease. I can get a T1 line. I can agree to do stuff over a few years that I wouldn't be able to do if I didn't know I had a consistent stream of income. So I think donations are important. And there's a second reason. It ties the listener to the podcast. If something is absolutely free, you know that if you just look at yourself and how you treat things, if it's absolutely free, you don't value it. Even if you pay a buck for it, you value it more than if it's free. So I think it's important to kind of get people to contribute because it means they're participating. There's a third reason, as I really want to. I don't, you know, you know how I feel about privacy. There's those addresses, I don't even know them. They are locked up. But I think ultimately what we would really like to do is be able to offer people who are donors coupon codes, access to stuff that they wouldn't get otherwise. We do already have a forum that's a private forum for donors only. And because it's for donors only, the level of conversation is much better in there. I mean, it's really a great place to be because, you know, it's funny. If you pay $2 a month, there's just something about it that those people are more committed. And so that's another way to monetize a podcast, too, because I can say to an advertiser, look, I want a coupon code. I love your product. I know that the people who that we call them the Twit Army, the people who have donated, would love your product. Why don't we give them 15% off? And I've already started this process, and there are a number of advertisers who say, that's great. And I say, you know, and what I'd like is $5 for every sale you make because, you know, in effect, it's advertising. And they're perfectly willing to do that. So that's another way to monetize, Samuel. And it's something that a small podcast can absolutely do. Say, look, we thank you for your donation. We appreciate your donation. And to reward you, we'd like to give you a coupon code. I think that's another way that you can monetize and make everybody happy. So I think there's a lot of it's. You have to remember, this is a brand new medium. We can't use the same techniques that the old media have used. We have to try new things. Advertising right now is very much old media.
And as you said, it is a new medium. And if you watch the mainstream media, especially television news bulletins, you can see that they're starting to get a little bit concerned about all of this citizen journalism, because I know that here in Australia, two of the main commercial networks, Channel 7 and Channel 9, both of them have at their during each of their news bulletins this message saying, if you're on the scene of a news story, get out your mobile phone and send us the pictures. And they're recognizing that people are there on the scene. They want to report it themselves, but they don't want to have you doing it on the internet. They'd rather you go through the traditional means.
Well, guess what? we're gonna start doing it ourselves. I see no reason at all to give away that stuff. And I think people initially go, oh, that's neat. You know, they want my picture. But believe me, mainstream media is, I don't think they're going to go away, but they are very much threatened by this, and rightly so, because ultimately there is going to be a much broader range of media out there because of user-generated content. I think you're going to see a lot of it. It's very exciting. I this podcast is a perfect example. I think ultimately we could threaten broadcast radio. And I know that with the broad variety of video that's being produced now, and it's getting better and better in quality, it's going to, in the long run, it's going to threaten television and cable networks. My kids don't go home and watch TV. They go home and watch YouTube. I think they are a harbinger of what's to come.
That takes me to another side issue, completely off topic, but I suppose you've probably played with both YouTube and Google Video. Which one do you prefer out of the two?
I like YouTube because it's very easy. The quality seems a little bit better. There seems to be more interesting stuff on there. Call for Help, our TV show, is available in the U.S. on Google Video for 99 cents, and that's something YouTube doesn't offer. There's another company called Rever that's like YouTube but shares its revenue with the broadcaster, and some people have made considerable amount of money on Rever. So, I think YouTube is really great. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube. I think one of the things that YouTube did that was very smart is they allowed people to link, you know, the videos into their blogs. So you'll see, these videos will spread around much more quickly than they do Google videos. YouTube just seems more fun to me. But that's right now. You know, 6 months, ask me again, everything will be different.
Yeah, just last night, for the first time, went and played with YouTube and Google Video, and overall, I was more impressed with YouTube. There was a couple of reasons. There, as you said, the quality was better. I thought the Flash player that you can embed on the web pages was a slightly higher quality. And uploading was just so much simpler because rather than having Google's bouncing logo flashing around, you had an actual status bar.
Right.
And I mean, if you sit there and watch the Google logo bouncing about for a while, you think, it's stopped working now, hasn't it?
Yeah, right. These are little things which can be fixed easily, but I do think, I do think things will change. I think the real bottom line is, this stuff is here. It's happening, and it's so exciting. I just really think we're just in a very exciting era. Especially, not just for content creators, like you and me, not just for people who want to make their own podcast, but for people who watch podcasts, you know, or watch content or consume content. It's a brave new world.
Hmm. I could go on talking to you all day, but in the email I sent you originally, I asked you for 20 minutes of your time. You've donated 40 minutes to me. So, Leo, thank you very much for coming onto the show.
I talk a lot. You just wind me up, and I keep going. Maybe that's the secret to all the podcasts.
How do KFI, your station in LA, how do they handle that when you've got a certain amount of ad breaks that you have to do?
They yell at me. They're very kind, but they yell at me. They say, "Break, break!" And I have to. As often I'm late to my breaks, so I have a bad habit.
Yep. All right, Leo, thank you very much for coming on to Samuel's Persiflage.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you, Samuel.
Persiflage puzzle time. That sounds like a good idea. I think it's been 40 minutes or so since we last updated the Persiflage puzzle, so dig around, find that bit of paper you've hidden in the last 40 minutes, and we'll have a look and see what's in the... Where did I put the puzzle paper? Oh, there it is. Alrighty then, let's... I think we might draw five letters out and see how we go. So, there we go. It's B for Bob. And it's in there. It's the first letter of the first word. So there you go. That's a bit of a start. Let's go for the next letter now. And we've got T for tank. I can't see that one in there. So let's have a look for another letter now. And it is the letter E for egg. That one's in there. So that's good. It's the fourth letter of the first word. Let's have a look at the letter S for Samuel. S for Samuel. It's a good letter, but it's not in there. And one more letter. Oh, okay. Well, that's probably going to give this away now. It's an O for orange. It's the second letter of the first word. I think that's just about done it. I'll give you a few minutes to think about that. We'll have the answer a little bit later on.
Samuel's Persiflage listener feedback. Send your emails to podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com.
Samuel's Persiflage listener feedback time now is, well, why am I telling you that when you've just heard it in the intro? I really don't know. I'm probably going mental. So, as you've already heard, podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address. Text or audio, it's fine. Of course, you can also send audio feedback to me via the good people at odeo.com. Just go to the Samuel's Persiflage website and click on the Send Spoken Feedback link or whatever it is. There's a button there. It says something along those lines. Send me a voice message, I think it says. You'll see it. All right, well, there's not much in here this month, I'm afraid, so this probably won't take very long at all. Lenny sends in an email. He says, "I'd like to subscribe to Samuel's Persiflage in iTunes rather than just downloading it each month. I've downloaded iTunes, but what do I do now?" Good question, Lenny. If you have a look, I'm glad you've downloaded iTunes because it's going to make this answer much, much quicker for me. If you have a look on the Samuel's Persiflage page, there's a link on there which says iTunes subscribe link or something to that effect. If you click on that, that'll open up iTunes, and then on that page you'll see a list of the episodes, and you'll also see a subscribe button. Hit that, and iTunes will deliver Samuel's Persiflage to you every time I release it. All by magic. Although I do have one person who, for some reason, iTunes just isn't updating them, so I don't know what's happening there, but I think he's got an older version of iTunes, which I... Oh, I don't know. But it doesn't really matter. I'm getting sidetracked. Mike Welsh from Canberra's Talk Radio 2CC has sent in a song, which he's actually been playing quite a lot on his show. He does the drive show for 2CC, and, well, it's a song that I don't think people from outside Australia are really going to understand. But he's been good enough to send it in, so I think we might play it.
He can't walk on water, he can't raise the dead. How can he be so damn good when he can't lie straight in bed? Plenty around they would if they could. Little Johnny, how can he be so good? Kids are in detention, kids are overboard. Sing the same song and tug the right chord. Cricket is the ashes, lies a bulldust. At the end of the day, just who do you trust? Being a poly don't make you a cheat. Just don't ask how we sell our wheat. Winners are grinners and losers are not. Get what you can and keep what you got. He can't walk on water, he can't raise the dead. How can he be so damn good when he can't lie straight in bed? Plenty around they would if they could. Little Johnny, how can he be so good? Once upon a time, turn back the clock. Little Johnny H was a laughing stock. Took it on the chin and took it in the back. Now it's George and John in the same sack. Don't be alarmed and don't be alert. Little white lies and no one gets hurt. All about cliches, pain and no gain. Excuse me, sir, but could you please explain? He can't walk on water, he can't raise the dead. How can he be so damn good when he can't lie straight in bed? Plenty around they would if they could. Little Johnny, how can he be so good? Little Johnny, how can he be so good? Little Johnny, how can he be so good?
Thank you, Mike. And that's the feedback for this month. It wasn't much there at all, really, was it? Podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address if you'd like to send some feedback, or you can send spoken feedback via the Samuel's Persiflage website, or you can even leave a comment on the Samuel's Persiflage number 8 page on my blog. All of those ways will get might just get you on the show. It depends on the comment. I mean, if you just send me something completely trivial and pointless, such as I don't know, sometimes I include them. I mean, we had one last month with someone just saying, Garanga, Garanga, Garanga. I don't know why I included that one. Dear. Maybe I am going mad. Podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address. I've said that 15 times now, haven't I? Maybe I should just press this button. Seems to have solved it. Well, normally we only have one thought for the month, but there's a few things on my mind. Most of them relate to the interview we had with Leo not long ago. Just thinking it would be good if I could stick to a script. I mean, I wrote a perfectly good... Actually, no, it wasn't very good script. for the intro to the interview with Leo. And if I'd... stuck to the script, or perhaps written a proper script. I mean, the script I've got here doesn't even mention Windows Vista, but if I'd stuck to the script, maybe this accident wouldn't have occurred. And for most people, the next version of Windows Vista is probably going to be at the top of their priority list. See, I'm pretty sure that we haven't had a version of Windows Vista yet. apart from the betas and release candidates, which really doesn't count. So how we can have the next version, I really don't know. Another one, if we could all use the same measuring systems. I mean, there we were, talking in degrees Fahrenheit, and there's a podcast coming to you from Canberra in Australia, and we use degrees Celsius. Leo said that he his temperature was in the 70s. Well, if that's the case, if that's in Fahrenheit, then it's absolutely fine. But if it's in Celsius, then, well, it's absolutely boiling. Just for the record, his 70s could be anywhere from about 21 to 26 degrees Celsius, which is very nice. But bear in mind, it was morning where he was. It was about 9 a.m., whereas where I am, in 40 degrees Fahrenheit, or 4.6 degrees Celsius, well, it was about 2 a.m. when I said that. So, it's kind of comparing apples and oranges, really, I think. And the other one, it would be good if there was a degree symbol on the keyboard. I mean, why isn't there? I mean, I look at this keyboard here, and there's symbols I'd never even use. I mean, the little upward pointing arrow above the 6. I think I've used that once. And I use degree symbols just about all the time. It would be much easier if there was a degree symbol on the keyboard somewhere. I mean, I know I can hold down Alt and press a bunch of numbers and a degree symbol will appear, but it's not quite the same thing. There should be a degree symbol on the keyboard. At least I think so. That's the thoughts for the month. Well, I'm babbling. Incoherently babbling. So I think it's a good thing that that music is playing, because that means it's time to go, and I'm sure that you've had enough of me incoherently babbling. I'll be back again next month to incoherently babble a little bit more, but until then, maybe you'd like the answer of the persiflage puzzle. Well, it's Boney M, a rather popular group from the 1970s, musical group that is. Apparently they're still around. I'm not entirely sure if that's accurate, but yeah, they were very popular in the 70s. I think they've kind of trailed off since then. They're certainly not on the top 40 charts anymore, but yeah, it's a very good group, some very good music there. And yeah, I was having a listen to some of that music before I actually came on air here, so very good group indeed. That's the show for this month. Podcast at samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address if you'd like to send me some feedback. I wouldn't be surprised if having Leo on the show has actually brought me a few more listeners, so welcome to all of you. You're probably going to run away screaming now, scratching your heads, wondering how did he ever get a show. That's probably the benefit of podcasting. Anyone can get a show, but incoherently babbling again. I give up. I think I'm going to go and have a lie down. You have a great month. I'll see you again in October. Until then, ta-da.